Being present to God. Letters on Prayer by Henri Gaffer. Translated by Angeline Bchiat. August 1, 1983. The Nihil Obstatent Imprimatur are a declaration that a book or pamphlet is considered to be free from doctrinal or moral error. It is not implied that those who have granted the Nihil Obstatent Imprimatur agree with the contents, opinions or statements expressed. Introduction. Vatican II vigorously reminded the laity of the Gospel's demand that they be present to the world. And yet, as has not always been sufficiently noted, it exhorted them with equal vigor to begin by becoming present to God. Indeed, what would a presence to the world amount to by witnesses who have not been in close contact with the one about whom they are to witness, by spokesmen who do not listen to the one whose message they are to transmit, by laborers who do not follow the foreman's commands? It is essentially during prayer that presence to God comes about. I am speaking of prayer that is first of all adoration and self-offering. That is why it has never been more urgent than now to initiate Christians into prayer and help them to pray, at a time when they are attaining a clearer awareness of their apostolic vocation and of their earthly tasks. Such is the reason for this book of nearly 100 letters on prayer. Most of them have already appeared in the Kirche zur Vorsorge. I have regrouped them into 10 chapters, focusing on 10 fundamental themes. I beg the reader not to approach this book as if it were a treatise on prayer. If he did, he would be disappointed. These pages do not claim to say everything there is to say on the subject, and they were not written with the rigorous logic of Manuel. They are a kind of directed exchange of views. In answer to a wide variety of spontaneous questions, they offer answers, using the familiar tone of conversation. The fact remains that a broad theology of prayer underlies these pages, as well as the experience of men and women of prayer, which has enriched Christian tradition over the centuries. These texts should not be read one after the other in rapid succession. That would be to miss their message. The author's hope is that his readers will read no more than one letter a day, and that this letter be made the object of meditation and seen as an invitation to enter into God's intimate friendship. There is no need to follow the order in which the letters are presented. It is for the reader to make his own selection as the need arises, with the help of the introductions that precede each chapter, presenting the theme of the letters in that chapter. Above all, the reader should not read on when he feels drawn to interior silence. The Holy Spirit is the only true master of prayer. When He calls us from within, we must leave everything and listen attentively. Being present to God. The teacher is here. Asking for you, John 11:28. In defining friendship or love, we often limit ourselves to a description of the feelings and actions of one of the parties involved. This is an error to be found in many works dealing with mental prayer. They confine themselves to man's activity, whereas mental prayer is an encounter and a loving exchange between God and man. When we go to mental prayer, we need to be convinced that we are expected, that God is there waiting for us. You are expected. God is indeed everywhere. But it is at the heart of our being that He invites us to join Him in the dialogue of love that is mental prayer. To in the house of the Lord, let us learn how to express our feelings and thoughts spontaneously, simply to the one who is welcoming us. 3. Speak to Him. Our underlying attitudes are even more important than our words. And first among them is man's loving response to God's love, a response that consists in a stripping of self, in placing oneself totally at the Lord's service. For the advice of the old parish priest, there is authentic self-giving only when it is done here and now. There must be eager attention, a presence to God of our whole being, of all of our fully energized faculties. 5. Being present to God. But if our words and interior attitudes are to be pleasing to God, We must first ask him what he wants to tell us and what response he is expecting from us. 6. Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening is 3:9. Then, like any encounter of love, our mental prayer will be new and original each day, providing we bring to it an attentive and inventive heart. 7. An invention of love. For all our good intentions, our mental prayer often fails to come up to our expectations. It has not become a turning of all our faculties toward the Lord to be gathered into Himself. But by the very fact that our innermost self is turned toward God, our prayer is already genuine. It may even be quite advanced. 8. The essential. Do we need to make use of methods when mental prayer is difficult for us? In a certain sense, mental prayer is recalcitrant to methods, just like love. Be this as it may, certain laws govern dialogue. In our relations with God as well as with other humans, it is very important to know these laws. 9. The practice of mental prayer, but in the last analysis, the important thing is to bear in mind that prior to any initiative or industry on man's part, mental prayer is a gift from God. 10. Mental prayer, a gift from God. You are expected. We cannot help feeling forlorn when we arrive in a strange city at the docks, the railroad or bus station, the airport, and know that nobody is there waiting for us. By contrast, if we are greeted by a cheerful face, if others reach out to help us, we have a wonderful sense of consolation. We are delivered from the cruel impression that somehow we have lost our way, that we are completely astray. The strangeness does not matter anymore, the customs, the language, the vast disconcerting city. It is not so hard to be a stranger to everybody else, providing there is one person who thinks of us as a friend. It is comforting, too, to discover that our hosts were expecting us. Our relatives and children don't need to say very much for us to sense it. Their attitude of welcome, the eagerness of their manner are enough. And when we are ushered to our room, we are finally convinced by the small vase of flowers, the book on art, because they know our tastes. Dear friend, I wish that whenever you go to mental prayer you may always have the strong conviction of being expected, expected by the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, expected within the family of the Trinity. For your place is ready. Remember Christ's words, times 7 m going to prepare a place for you, John 14:3. You may object that Jesus was speaking of heaven. True enough. But that is precisely what mental prayer is. It is heaven, at least in its essential reality, the presence of God, the love of God, God's welcome to His child. The Lord is always expecting us. Better still, when we have barely made a few steps toward Him, He comes out to meet us. Remember the parable: while He was still a long way off, His Father caught sight of Him and was deeply moved. He ran out to meet Him, threw His arms around His neck, and kissed Him, Luke 15:20. This son had grievously offended His Father. He was expected nonetheless, impatiently expected. 2. In the house of the Lord. Stephen and Sylvia, a childless couple, both physicians, came to see me before leaving for the remote bushland where the two of them, alone except for the company of two missionaries, are to dedicate themselves to a completely new Christian community. They know it will be hard, and that in order to persevere they will need to pray a great deal. So they came to ask me to speak to them one last time about mental prayer, to give them essential advice on it. And as they left me, they insisted that I put into writing for them what I had just said. My dear friends, for centuries the roads and bypaths of Judea witnessed, several times a year, unending streams of men, women, and children on their way to Jerusalem. The slopes of the Judean mountains were steep. Shade was rare, the sun beat down relentlessly, but nothing could discourage these devout Jews from going to the holy mountain. The sentiments that guided them, that sustained their courage, are known to us. We find them echoed in the many psalms they sang as they walked, their pilgrim hymns. How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts! My soul yearns and pines for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. I had rather lie at the threshold of the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wicked. PS 84:2, 3, 11. 7. Rejoiced because they said to me, We will go up to the house of the Lord. PS 122:9. Once back home, when the hour of prayer arrived, wherever they were, in the house or in the fields, they turned towards Jerusalem to praise the Almighty. There can be only one explanation for such a passionate love of their capital, such dedication to their temple, such fidelity over the centuries. Jerusalem was much more than the capital of the kingdom. It was the city of the Lord, and the temple was his house where they were always sure of finding him. It was the desire to find God, to encounter him, the most basic aspiration of every religious person, that set in motion these throngs of believers, these seekers after God whose fervor is revealed in the Psalms. Christ came. He manifested his love for Jerusalem, and his respect for the Father's house. At the same time, he declared that the temple had lost its meaning, and would soon disappear. At the hour of his death on the cross, the veil of the Holy of Holies was torn, as if indeed to signify that this temple was now desacralized. It would be replaced by a new, imperishable temple, rebuilt in 3 days, the temple of his body, of his mystical body. There alone would men and women henceforth be able to find God. But everyone who enters this temple becomes in their turn the dwelling place of God. Jesus has assured us of this: anyone who loves me will be true to my word, and my Father will love him, we will come to him and make our dwelling place with him. John 14:23. This is an astonishing revelation. Did God desert the temple in order to come and dwell in the souls of his faithful? Yes. Saint Paul says so explicitly, Are you not aware that you are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? I Cor 3:16. You are the temple of the living God. Titus 6:16. This word temple is not very meaningful for us. But under the pen of the apostle, trained from childhood to venerate and love the temple of Jerusalem, it assumed its full meaning. In these texts the word translated by temple would be more aptly rendered by Holy of Holies, the heart of the temple, the locus of the divine presence. And so God is within us, within the very heart of our being, present, living, loving and acting. It is there that he calls us. It is there that he is waiting for us, to unite us to himself. God is there, but we are not. Our existence is spent outside ourselves, or at least on the periphery of our being, in the zone of sensations, emotions, imaginings, discussions, in that noisy and anxiety-ridden suburb of the soul. And if we happen to think of God, to yearn to encounter him, we go out of ourselves. We seek him on the outside, forgetting that he is right there within us. We do not know the paths of our soul that will lead us into the subterranean and luminous chamber where God dwells. Or else, if we do know them, we lack the courage that impelled the fervent Jews to follow the roads to the holy city. Is it a more arduous undertaking to reach the center of ourselves than it was for the Jews to go to Jerusalem? Mental prayer means getting away from the tumultuous suburb of our being of which I just spoke. It is to recollect, to gather up all our faculties and plunge into the arid night that leads to the depths of our soul. Once on the threshold of the sanctuary, we need only to be silent and attentive. It is not a matter of spiritual sensation, of interior experience. It is a matter of faith. It means believing in the presence. It means adoring the living Trinity in silence. It means offering and opening ourselves up to the overflowing life of the Triune God. It means cleaving to, and communing in, the eternal act of the Trinity.